Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gridiron Blitz Podcast, your weekly source for women's American football, insights, game recaps, and NFL news weekly. Subscribe on Apple and iHeart.
Welcome to Gridiron Blitz, episode 452, Oscar Lopez in the house, and we're going to be followed by the backseat coach, aka Mark Simone, plus coach Terry Lister of TL Talks podcast in the second hour as we break down the WNFC 9-Cup preview of the final, Texas Elite Spartans taking on the Mississippi Lady Panthers. The matchup that we all wanted in the WNFC finally has come true, and so this is what we're waiting for this weekend, big weekend in the WNFC. We'll go over all the itinerary that's going to happen for the Women's National Football Conference annual 9-Cup weekend. And then we're also going to dive in a little bit on our thoughts on the WNFC annual awards finalist list that came out about a week ago. Everybody was there. Some of the top players for each category, defensive, offensive, special teams, defensive players. So we're going to break that down. We'll also dive into a little bit of the All-Pro, who was selected to the All-Pro team. That's going to include Jennifer King and Callie Branson. Both will be coaching individual teams, teams Saucy and Team Drip. So that's going to be awesome and exciting to see. Both of them on the sidelines, taking advantage of the 9-Cup event weekend. And then also you will need to subscribe to WScore, and how you go on there, it's going to be an extra fee, of course, but that's how it's going to go. You can just dive into WScore, and it's going to be like, I believe, $14.99. And then it's going to be extra cost on there. But, you know, if you want to watch the 9-Cup championship, that's where it's going to be. The 9-Cup championships, you know, basically Mississippi versus the Texas Elite Spartans, three-time champs versus Mississippi up and coming at this point. So we'll see how they fare against the champions. But, the underdogs, that's who we're rooting for. We're rooting for the Mississippi Lady Panthers to somehow upset the Texas Elite. That would be a classic 9-Cup event. Hopefully that will happen. Sean Gore, Regina Jackson, Mary Woodward, Mary was here on our podcast a couple podcasts ago, so you can go back to, I believe, 448, if I'm correct, and then 449 as well, plus 451. If you missed it last week, the great Lexi Floor of the DC Divas was here with us, including the talented T. Singleton, getting ready for the WFA playoffs for the road to Canton. We're also breaking down Adrian Smith was also here at 449. So you can guess go back in 449 and Angelica Grayson as well, Coach Angelica Grayson of the Texas Elite Spartans. And then if you go back to 448, we interviewed the talented LaWanda Renee Pearson of the Pittsburgh Passion. So check out, subscribe, share our podcast on your favorite platform, Sprecher, Apple, or any other platform. If you want to go to the shop, our podcast is sponsored by Zazzle.com. Worldwide shipping, and if you're in the U.S., you get Zazzle Black, and you get free shipping year-round for 12 months. So if you want to go to the shop at the No Joke Football Shop, it's Zazzle.com/Grand Beauties. 15% off gets you Zazzle Thanks. If there's a higher code, make sure you use it. You can get great stuff at Zazzle, wedding stuff. You can get party stuff, pretty much gifts. So if you're not inclined to buy anything from our shop, it's not a big deal. They also offer Star Wars, Disney, and major brands, Marvel as well. So check it out at Zazzle.com/Gridiron Beauties and support the podcast that way first. All right, so we're going to do international recaps right now, kind of go into it at this point. Let me break it down for you. So a lot of action happening. If you're not at the Hub, the best network on the planet exists at the Hub at Facebook.com/Gridiron Beauties. You can also get updates on our Twitter feed at Gridiron Beat on our Twitter. And you can follow us on Instagram every day in our stories and our reels and our posts. on Instagram. Our stories are very popular. Thank you, everybody, for liking those and sharing those as well. And we got a mixture of a great networking team. We're also incorporating some of the top talented youth flag football players on the planet, including some of the top talented athletes in flag football. So you get your fix right there at on Instagram at Gridiron Breeze on Instagram as well. You can also visit our shop, our No Joke Football shop, on Instagram at No Joke Football, and you get to see the talented athletes that we are supporting there as well. All right, let's dive into it here before we get into the interview. And today we're going to have the talented Chris Sacco talking Utah Girls Football League and its continued success with the players in the WNFC. Some of the players from the Utah Girls Tackle Football League were actually participating in the Utah Falcons, including Laura Getz, the quarterback that was in the playoffs, because Sarah Galicia went down in the last playoff game. So a lot of talent from the Utah Girls Football League now kind of migrated into the WNFC in terms of Utah. We'll see if they migrate in any of the other teams at this point. So we'll be talking to Chris Sacco about the 2023 season and what they have in store for the 2024 upcoming season and how parents can participate, plus the big events that happen there where they're getting support by the Utes, the conference there, where they're going to be doing a lot of things with the girls tackle football league in terms of the high school realm. So we'll get the lowdown and the fix and everything from Chris Sacco here in a couple minutes. So she'll break it down. So action overseas, it didn't turn out as well as we thought it would. We actually thought Copenhagen Raptors would at least be competitive versus the domination station that is the Karlstad Crusaders, Linda Johansson and company, and Gabby Knobs. So they win 47-6, take down the Copenhagen Raptors. So Raptors not ready for the big time, if you want to call it that. And then there was a couple games that were actually forfeited. Göteborg against ADKI, there was a scoreless, couldn't get the update there as well. And then on the 18th, our Copen edges Vestera Roosters 19-6. On the 20th, Karlstad gets the win. So that's the last week of the season, forfeited by Vålerenga Trolls. So the semifinals are set. It's going to be Karlstad against Nordkopen, probably not going to fare well there. And then it's Göteborg versus AIK. So it's going to either be Karlstad, Göteborg, Karlstad, AIK, and neither of those two teams have fared well against the Crusaders. So at the stands right now, Karlstad Crusaders will probably repeat for another season in Sweden. They are that dominant and that impressive. So I don't think there's anybody in the league at this point even considered second. And we thought Copenhagen Raptors would have been that team, and it just did not turn out to be that team. So it's about really, what we're going to be, dealing with going forward. I think until somebody else steps up in terms of a program's stability, Karlstad's going to continue to reign in terms of the Swedish Super Series, Women's Super Series. All right. And in Finland, it was Helsinki getting beat by Turku. Edge 23-14, very good matchup. You can get it on Roto right there if you have Roto access on there in terms of Europe. So Maple League action right there. We're going to keep tabs on the next couple weeks here as the season winds down. And more than likely, as it stands also in Sweden, Turku looks very strong. Leah Kazai out there in company, they're doing a really good job. So Helsinki, Turku, probably going to be the final once again in Finland. And a resurgence Helsinki team has come a long way. So they've actually been more competitive this year than they were last season. So we'll see how it works out. But more likely the favorites are going to be Turku at this point. The other final that's going to happen besides the Nine Cup in the United States this weekend, it's going to be the WWCFL final. That'll be Saskatoon Valkyries looking for another title, going up against Calgary Rage. And unfortunately, in the WWCFL, the last week of the season, plus the semifinals, were bad. The forfeited side on the West Coast was forfeited, so it basically gave Calgary an opportunity just to walk into the final. They've had going on 2 weeks now, 2 weeks to prepare for the Saskatoon Valkyries. and we'll see how well they are prepared against Saskatoon. And Saskatoon, kind of a tune-up game for them as they take down Regina, the Regina Riot, in the Prairie Conference Final. So last season forfeits, not a very good look for the WWCFL, but it is what it is. We do get the West, East and West matchup this season. And Calgary, of all teams, is probably the standout team on the West side. So they are going to be the underdogs going up against the Valkyries. Valkyries, like I said, staple program. They've been the dominant force in the WWCFL since its creation. Kind of similar to what Karlstad in the Swedish league has been. So interesting to see what will happen there, whether Calgary has an opportunity to really shine and take down Saskatoon Valkyries in the WWCFL finals. So we'll keep you updated at the hub, facebook.com/GridironBeauties. To be, like I said, the best network on the planet exists at the hub. We built it, and we have amazing networking people that maintain it. And we're hoping that, you guys are share, like, and our post to bring more awareness to women's tackle football internationally as well, and as well as domestically. All right, so let's go to Germany. It was this weekend on 6/17. I believe it's week 3, if I'm correct, or week 4, I believe. Saarland 36 falls to Munich Cowboys 54-36. Kind of a good competitive matchup there until the fourth quarter. Then it was Berlin 66-0, routing of the Baltic Hurricanes. And you can watch it, YouTube access. We have the link right there. Berlin just dominant all game. Baltic just didn't have an answer on both sides of the ball. So they're struggling already in the season. Then Erlanger, Rebels 6, they fall to Stuttgart 17-6. Then we'll have this weekend coming up here. And I mean, look at the schedule that's coming up here. So let's see here, 17th, 18th. Okay, here we go. So July 1st, we're looking at a really good clash. It will be Munich Cowboys taking on Stuttgart Scorpions. And then it will be the Berlin Cobras taking on the Hamburg Amazon. And those teams are, let's see here, Munich 2-2, Stuttgart 4-0, Berlin 2-0, and Hamburg 2-0. So that's going to be an interesting undefeated matchup of undefeated there. And then Erlangen, 2-2, will take on the winless Saarland squad, and so the Saarland Hurricanes as well. So that's on July 1st. And then there is also DBL2 action. Cologne Falconets taking on Bochum Miners. You got the Solingen versus Molham Shamrocks. You got Rodu Pioneers taking on Regensburg Phoenix. The Odenburg Knights will be taking on the Lindendal Venom. And then on the July 2nd, it's going to be DBL2 right there. So DBL1 action, Ellinger Rebels take on Saarland Hurricanes, Berlin Cobras against Hamburg Amazons, and the Munich Cowboys will be taking on the Stuttgart Scorpions. So really good matchups there as well. So the standings so far in DBL1 in the German league, the Cobras are in first place in the north, 2-0 undefeated against Hamburg, 2-0 undefeated. So it's a battle in the standings for the North in the Bundesliga League North. So these two teams will clash this coming weekend, or July 1st, and then we'll take on that. Call Baltic Hurricanes, like I said, are undefeated. I mean, winless, 0-4 in that North Division. In the South Division, Stuttgart's 4-0, and then Ellinger's 2-2, Munich 2-2, and then Saarland Hurricanes are 0-4. So really good matchups here. So the 4-0 Stuttgart Scorpions, which very impressive last year, top team in the league. So now they're going to be going up against Munich. Munich's kind of on a good high at this point after a 54-36 win over Saarland. And then you got Berlin coming off that 66-0 win going up against Hamburg. And let me see. Hamburg was, double check here for you, Hamburg back on 6-3, if I'm correct. Here we go. Hamburg. There you go. So Hamburg coming off a 40-18 trashing of Kilbotic Hurricanes there as well. That was back on 6-3. And then they haven't played it. I don't think they've played a game since before that. I think they played the game before that. But so it's basically 2-0 against 2-0. So that will be the matchup, the key matchup in Germany at this point. So it's going to be interesting to see how that fares up at this point as well. So interesting to see that. So let's see here. All right. Let's see here. We'll see if I can. There we go. And we'll see. So Chris Sackle will be coming in here in a minute here, and we're going to dive into everything that's happening in the Utah Girls Football League, plus the excitement of the changes for the high school girls in terms of tackle in high school. So let's bring in into the Zazzle Huddle. Don't forget to go to Zazzle.com/GridironBeauties, and you get 15% off. Use Zazzle Thanks. Worldwide shipping. If you're in the U.S., you get Zazzle Black, 12 months free shipping. So don't forget to go to the No Joke Football Shop at Zazzle.com/GridironBeauties. All right, let's bring in the talented Chris Sacco, co-founder of the Utah Girls Football League. Chris, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it, making the time.
You're welcome. I'm excited.
All right, Chris, we haven't talked to you in a while, and it's been a whirlwind 12 months. So after this COVID thing, it's like you guys haven't missed a beat, but tell us a little bit about the 2023 season and the excitement. For the season looked like it was awesome, and thanks to I think it's Shutterskunk, right, who was keeping tabs and taking photos of everything. It was awesome.
She did a phenomenal job. She's really, really talented. It was nice to see her work, and I feel like she's going to continue to grow it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, to showcase some of the talent, that was awesome. And you saw some of the still photos. I mean, a lot of the, you know, for a lot of the teams, but those are all also memories, right? I mean, if you think about it, just a lot of memories for the girls too.
Yeah, especially with our plans coming up with our league, you know, those photos are something we'll be able to hold on to forever, along with all the other history.
Tell us a little bit about the bombshell news that came about. We couldn't get you in sooner. I was trying to get you in, you know, before, right after the announcement, but I was already booked with other guests. But tell us a little bit about this, how this came about, and how you guys are elevating to that high school tackle level.
Yeah, so we decided to join in with the Ute Conference. That's our youth men's program here in Utah, and it's been around for years, and they're awesome. And the girls are going to be able to have a season this fall, so I in a few short weeks they're going to start. But we already have people registering for it, and we're just going to start with the junior high division, and then after that, not next season, the season after, all of our league is going to transfer into the Ute Conference. So Utah Girls Tackle Football, we're going to have one more season, and then that's it.
So,
and
Chris,
this will be,
how does that
good
work?
For high school.
How does that work structurally for you guys in terms of, like, being part of that? Is that, you know, funding wise? In other words, what I mean.
Well, I believe it's just pretty much the same. Like the. Pretty much the girls are going to register through the Ute Conference, and they'll just pay the registration fee that they charge, just like they were to come into our league. And then I believe the Ute Conference is going to provide equipment just like they do with the boys. So
Okay. Cost
difference, I don't think it's going to be that much. The Ute Conference, they're going to model basically everything we have done, and I believe they're going to keep the price very similar.
What's your thoughts on it? I mean, initially, did you, you know, great, this is a good move? Or was it something that you guys worked hard at?
I was really nervous at first, just because I was concerned because they're, you know, that's a whole different board. It's a whole different conference. But I know the boys have had a good experience with them, and they've been around for years, so I feel like this is going to be a good move, because next season for the Utah Girls Tackle, next spring, that will be season number 10. And I just feel like if everybody goes over to the Ute Conference and plays around the same time the boys do, it's just going to grow our league. It's just going to grow girls' football in general. Because I don't think our league is going to grow any bigger without that, the Ute Conference, because they're all over Utah. They're in different cities. It'll just open up more doors. Also, it will help with the high school. Our chances of the girls getting into the high schools and playing in the high schools are a lot bigger if they join in with the Ute Conference. Does that make
Chris,
sense?
Chris, do we want to clarify? You guys have never been in competition, you know, to be like the boys, right? You've always been in the
never.
Situation where you wanted the opportunity for the girls to get the same, you know, recognition or same type of funding, right, that the boys would get
yes.
with their own league.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. And I think that this will just show that, like, it's just going to be a good,
yeah.
because once those girls are in ninth grade, they can go play in their high schools. Just like the boys, they get to move up into the high school. So
mm-hmm.
that's like a lot of equality. And the girls still get to play on their own teams. Like, it's not like they're going to be playing with the boys. They're just going to be basically playing side by side, and they'll have their own games. I think it's going to be awesome. It's exciting, but
Chris,
interest-wise,
is have you seen that level of interest beyond your little, you know, a world that you guys created in the last 10 years?
Well, when we
like
did the
point,
announcement.
Like,
when we did the announcements, a bunch of parents commented on the Facebook, and then, of course, I got some text messages, and they just kept saying, congratulations, it's about time we stepped it up. You guys stepped it up. Good job. Like, it was stuff like that. Like, so it was more excitement. Like, this is a step up. Like, this, I mean, if you think about it, the University of Utah is, like, that's huge with football. So, I mean, we're going – we have youth and then high
mm-hmm.
school and then hopefully one day college.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just a
and
step
it's,
up.
And it's kind of like an equal level playing field now, because it makes sense, right? Because you had your own little bubble. Now, to your point, the high schools will have the incorporated girls' plan just like they would do girls' lacrosse or girls' soccer, right? All the other programs that they incorporated.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. I think it's just going to show the high schools and the board from the schools, like, hey, look, this is possible. Because those girls have to go somewhere. Like, how else are we going to grow the sport for girls?
Well, the only thing I'm saying is, you know, you got field hockey for girls. You got lacrosse for girls. I mean, I'm out in California, and there's funding for these other sports, but somehow there's not funding for American football. You know what I mean? It seems weird. We can help, you know, lacrosse and field hockey, and all of a sudden when it comes to, like, American football, everybody's like, okay, but I don't see any difference in cost, right? Because if you're playing lacrosse, you're still padded. You still got to have a helmet, right? You're still incorporating
yep.
shield guards and yeah, everything else, mouth guards, and right? And there's similar things to it. It's just the context probably different, right? Because you're not, like,
yeah,
you know, going at it every time, as an example. It's more open space, in other words.
Exactly. Yep, it's exciting. I think that it's going to be a huge success, and my hope is other states, their programs that they have for their boys' football will do the same thing.
Do you think it'll be more prominent in Florida and California? In terms of the bigger states, you know, like, you guys are doing it there. If it's successful there, more than likely it's going to be one of those big states, you know, like the Texas and the Floridas and the Californias, as an example.
Honestly, like, right now there's a guy in southern Utah, and his program that he has, he wants to do the same thing, and then also Las Vegas. So I honestly think
okay.
it might go that direction, and then into California, and then Texas, and then hopefully Florida. The problem is
because I know
a lot of people in
black football
states,
is very prominent in those states.
Yeah, California, Texas, Oregon too. Oregon, they've showed some interest.
Now, Chris, What has been the excitement for the girls? Have you dived into it? The announcement came out. I mean, what kind of feedback are you getting from the actual, you know, talent that's going to go to another level? In other words, or play in their actual alma mater, you know what I mean, or their actual school district?
I feel like it's a positive outcome. The girls are like, oh, my gosh, can we sign up? So the girls that are in junior high, because this fall they're running just the junior high division, so it's going to be seventh through ninth grade, and then sixth graders can join. But the elementary, they were like, when can we do it? So I feel like they were all just excited, if anything. Some are a little bit like, oh, we love the Utah Girls Tackle Football League. I hope the bond is the same. So the social part of it, I feel like they're a little bit nervous about that, like that it's not going to be the same energy because our league is so – it's like they create so many friendships. I feel like it's going to be pretty similar. And we're going to be right there. Like, I know this fall we're going to – a lot of the coaches from our league are going to go over and coach the girls. So I think once the parents and the girls see that, they'll feel more comfortable about it. I think they just don't want to lose that pixie dust that our league puts off of, you know. I think that's the only
thing that they're concerned about. You also have like a traveling team mentality, right, with your league. It's kind of like a, you know, how you bond with travel teams, where like it's just a one,
yes.
You know, you're so comfortable with that travel mentality that – so it's like a little tight nucleus, right, for you guys to kind of let go and trying to go into the unknown, right?
Yep, exactly. They have, I think, like you said, it's the unknown thing that they're a little bit nervous about, but it's a good nervous. And like I said, how else are we going to grow it? I mean, we can continue to have Utah Girls Tackle Football League, but it's going to stay the same, and we want more competition. We want to be able to – the girls want to be able to play in different locations and then also in the high schools.
Now, Chris, what's your reaction so far in terms of, like, the leadership at that conference and, you know, what's your role in it? In other words, to just, okay, are you providing feedback, console? I mean, what's the role between you and other people that helped you out with Utah in terms of growing the league? And are you guys going to be there, like, you know, just to mitigate things and stuff like that?
Yeah, as board members, we're going to do our best to, like, at least guide them. And we've already talked to them, like, how we want to keep they, you know, if they would, we asked them if they could keep it pretty similar to how we ran the league. And they were 100%, like, open to it. Like, there wasn't any hesitation. They want to keep it very similar, and also our coaches, to be able to go over and coach. Because our coaches, they all got attached to their coaches. And I think that that's been a big thing, you know. And their friends, like, staying on the same teams almost. So yeah, the Ute Conference, they want our help. They're not going to be like, I don't think it's a competition thing. They're not going to be like, well, we run things this way and this is the only way. They're open to our feedback.
It's kind of like a separate division anyways, right? Because it's like any other sport. I mean, the boys' soccer division isn't run the same as the girls', right? Because there's obviously intangibles with gender, and there's intangibles with, you know, how things are run, right, and how to approach things with coaches.
Yep.
And, you know, not that we want to, like, separate either one, but there is different approaches, right, to your point, on how to handle a girls', you know, tackle football team versus a boys' tackle football team, as an example.
Yeah, because I noticed that with lacrosse, there's a lot of difference. I feel like it's going to be the same thing with football. And I honestly, the number one thing is safety, and I think that's the reason why they do it the way they do. I don't think there's going to be any problems. I know in our league right now, we just start in the middle of the field. Like, we don't do kickoff and stuff like that, special teams. I forgot to ask Brent Gordon if they're going to do that in the Ute Conference. I don't think this year they're going to. I think they're going to keep it identical to what we did. And then eventually, I'm thinking eventually they're going to do that. I think he said for the upper age groups like high school, I'm assuming they're going to do golf and kick return teams and stuff.
That, well, that makes more sense for safety purposes because they're older more and a little bit more wiser to educate, right? Where in junior high,
yeah,
that could be more of a detriment.
Well, even the Ute Conference, they like how we – they love how we do it with the girls and for the younger ages. And I'm thinking they may actually mimic that with the boys eventually for safety
yeah.
purposes. They just think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
And there's alterations
like that part.
Based on – there's alterations based on those factors like you're mentioning, right? Because you got to take those things into account too. So.
Exactly. Yep, and it's such a good – it's just a good thing we're doing here. And, again, like – and you've interviewed – I've been on here before and starting to pick up on it.
Well, we had
this
Indiana, and then it didn't fall through. And then there was somebody in South Carolina. And so there's been other states with interest. I think Atlanta, Georgia. But nothing to your level. You know what I mean? Nothing to your guys' scale and
standards. They launched a couple seasons, but then something happened. I don't know exactly what, but I couldn't even find the guy that ran it before. I don't know if he's even involved anymore. So I would be honestly open to going and mentoring other states.
Yeah.
Like
I said,
I would just have to
Florida,
reach out. All I have to do
primary,
is to manage programs.
I know for sure Texas would be your way in because, you know, Texas has that interest, right? It's just a matter of introducing the sport, you know, and where else can you want to introduce it to but Texas, right? The football heaven, basically.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I feel like if I just reach out to the whoever's running their programs and I even get my board involved and then see if I can even get the Ute Conference board involved, like just for even if they just give some sort of like mentorship or feedback to them, like, hey, you should try this. This is how we're doing it. I feel like they could launch a program easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of the people that reach out to us and they're like, oh, we're in this state. I really wish I could play, especially on like TikTok and, you know, Facebook and Instagram, like they're constantly reaching out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is an interest, right? It's like, there's no doubt anymore. You know, girls do want to play American football. That's just, there's no doubt, you know, because the interest is there.
Yeah. And we had a lot of girls play on the Falcons this year, which was pretty cool.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Sarah goes down and then we get, who is this Laura, right? Laura girl. And then we're like,
so Laura
alumni
Gates,
out of the Utah girls.
Yeah, Laura Gates, she's been with our league since day one. Her dad is actually the president of our league. And Sean, he's really cool. And she's just rocked it. Like, and then she went on to the Falcons and she's tearing it up. And it looks like she's going to the the All-American USA team or whatever? What do they call it?
The All-Pro.
I don't know why I'm having a
blank. The All-Pro game?
Yeah. She's going to that, and then she's going to serve a mission, like, I think the day after.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. How proud are you, Chris?
Yeah.
We're going to have some infiltration into the WNFC, even if it's the Utah Falcons. That's to see them go to the next level, which is what everybody, you know, women's tackle football in terms of the pro level.
I know. I think that it's just – it's neat to see. And it seems like the girls had a good experience on the Falcons too. I know Laura and there's a few other girls on there. And they were happy they got to continue to play after they graduated from high school.
Yeah. I mean, it would only be fitting for them to get paid to play. Hopefully that'll mature for them, right? We didn't mature for others so far, but
yeah, and honestly, like, you know, I'm pretty in tune. Like, my vision is seeing the high schools happen and then college.
Yeah.
These teams going into, you know, being able to play. Because they are college level. Like, it's amazing. They shouldn't have to,
no, you
know,
for
to play.
Sure. For sure. Yeah, no, and if you think about it, maybe the Midwest Conference will take it into account, right? Or maybe one of the major, not the, you know, maybe not the SEC but or the ACC, but maybe it's going to be, you know, the Big Ten or the Big 12, or maybe it's going to be the Midwest Conference, right? The Mountain Conference. Somebody's going to have interest into it. And maybe somebody will roll it out, like you said, with just like the Youth Conference. Maybe once you set a precedent for the standard and how things could execute, it might go to the college level in that sense.
I agree. I mean, it has to. We have to. Like you said, there's no, you know, everybody wants to play football. The girls want to play now. Like, it's just, they always have, but now it's out there breaking the gender barriers all around. It's a beautiful,
it's great to see the, you know, the evolution of your league, and now we're getting it to this, you know, to another level, right? Which is now, this is bigger than anything else that you would have thought of in year one, right? Like, basically the league created, and now we have an actual conference with some backing and some structure and some real, you know, pull with it, right? Because they've done it so long that they have standards and they have guidelines and they have all that other stuff that you normally would have to deal with. Now it's kind of like, you know, the girls have to just participate into that level.
I know, and the fact that next season will be season 10, like, I'm getting
old. That's why I wanted to bring you on. How do you reflect on that? Have you sat down with wine and cheese and go, this is where we're at 10 years later?
When I pulled up to the field the last, I don't know what game it was, but there was all those parents in the parking lot full. Like, I swear we had like over 1,000 people. And I sent the picture to Brent. My girlfriend made me take the picture. And I said, look what we built. Look what we've done. And that's when it really hit me. Like, it hits me every single year, but that's when it really hit me.
Chris, do you understand what you've done? Do you, like, reflect on it in terms of, like, you get feedback from other players, like, as they grow? Like, you've seen them since, like you said, they're like your babies in a lot of ways. And it's, like, separate. Yeah, you're like a parent in a lot of ways with a bunch of minions, right? And they go from one age group to the next, and then all of a sudden there's womanhood.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing.
To have you be part of their moment, you know what I mean? To be part of their moment is, it's incredible. That's what I'm saying to you. It's like you're a little piece, right, of you is in every incremental stage of their life, which is awesome.
Yes, it is. I cry all the time, actually. I swear. I know the parents are very proud of their daughters too, and I think that's what makes me tear up a lot.
I think if we've sat down a couple of times, you've never emotionally, as I say, broken down, but at the same time, you know, 10 years later, I mean, we have to give you credit, Brent credit, but overall, you know, the people that actually launched this, that believed in it, right? The parents see all that value that you guys brought to the attention, and not including the labor hours, right? Man hours, labor hours, all the other stuff that include volunteering, basically.
Yeah, we couldn't have done it without the parents, the referees, our photographer, like even Sean and his family, you know. There's no way that, like, it just wouldn't run without our, you know, our tight group the way it has. And that's why I was concerned about switching over to the Ute Conference. But when they reassured us, like, hey, we're going to mimic what you guys are doing. And I know the guys have a good experience with the Ute conference. So it'll be okay. I think that was just, you know, that pixie dust, that's what I call it. I hope it stays, which I feel like it will. The more competition, of course, you get drama here and there. But what else is new? I think it's just going to, I think it's just going to continue to stay. And I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep reaching out to these other states. As a matter of fact, I got a nice camper that I can, like a travel camper that I can take to state if I have to. Like, we're,
look
I'm willing
you.
To do that. Because
venturing
I really
America.
Seriously, that's, I mean, besides the land property that we just got for my business, like, that's my next step is I don't care if I have to travel out to different places to go talk to their programs. Because that's all it's going to take.
But it's fun, right? It's fun.
Yeah.
It's not going to be laboring for you because it's fun because you're like, you're going into, like you said, place something down that maybe will catch fire and, right, and rises again.
Yeah, because they just need that motivation. I just need to go to the people's board and just be like, hey, you know, are you guys interested in starting a girls program? And I feel like they would be on board with it.
No, I feel too. I mean, that's why I mentioned California, for example. You know, they got the flag program going, right? They're starting to do it, you know, roll it out statewide. You got Florida that's already had some established program. It's just a matter of accepting tackle. Because most of them already accept flag, you know what I mean? So just a matter of accepting tackle. And it might not be the whole state, but it could be just a certain districts, right, are willing to do it. And you just need to start in one district and do an annual event type mentality. And hopefully that will catch, like you said, momentum.
Exactly. It just takes that start. And I do, I feel like, Texas, they got a big program in California. Those two, I do believe those two states might be the first, possibly Las Vegas too, because the one guy that I talked to, he's pretty motivated in getting a season going with his boys program.
And you do have resources that I'm pretty sure you're aware of. You got resources, you got the WNFC, the WFA in Los Angeles. You got the WNFC, WFA in Texas, right? You got resources. So if you kind of like, you know, communicate with the leadership in both leagues, I'm pretty sure they, you know, they can offer avenues and networking and contacts for doing that program. And you know, it would only benefit them anyways, you know, to ensure that girls tackle football grows because that's a kind of like a feeder system for both of them.
Yes, I know, and I feel like if some of their board members reach out to other people, it would definitely grow. And it would grow their teams,
well,
too.
Yeah, no, and so, Chris, I wanted to bring you on because this was, like, big news, but also it's very important because it is an elevation to just not the Utah Girls Football League, but it is an elevation to, you know, girls tackle football, right, at another stage and level where if this works and this conference does do its job, it's going to be a big model for other conferences that want to maybe take into account that type of program.
Yes, 100%. I feel like it's going to just continue to succeed because they always say after if you have a business or a nonprofit and you can make it through 5 years, then you're good.
No, this is good. I mean, and you got Sam doing, I think Sam's doing the UA next football, right? And you got a couple of WFC players that are participating in that camp too, and those camps as well. So I think there's a lot of networking and resources available to where you'll get supported. Right, or Brent as well, to where it will launch to the bigger states. Like I said, if the bigger states accept it, like California, like you said, Nevada, or even Texas or Florida, then the other states will follow at some point. You know, the New Yorks, New England, that kind of deal, that area out there as well. Even
like
you said, out the Northwest.
I feel like they will, and I feel like, because I keep thinking, do I have to, like, provide some sort of, I don't know, program to that people can follow, or just go out and mentor them? You know, I've written those questions down, like, do I build a whole thing for that? But I feel like if I just go out and motivate and mentor and get a few people to do the same, like, and those women that have the teams, like the Falcons, I bet they would be 100% involved in it. And
oh, yeah, for sure.
The other
that's what I'm
teams,
saying. You have networking. You have networking, you know, resources, in other words, right? You got the pro teams that you can literally network with, and you already have some players in coaching in some high schools, boys teams. So it wouldn't be that big of a deal for those female coaches to jump from the boys coaching environment to creating a girls coaching environment, and especially if the high schools are paying them too to create that program. So it just, it'll migrate that way, in other words.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Did we go into anything that I haven't mentioned or something that you need to disclose to us or let us know that we didn't talk about?
No, I feel like we mentioned everything. I do, like, once everything does switch over, I want this, like, regardless, I just want the Utah Girls Tackle Football League to, I mean, it's always going to go down in history, but I don't know. I know that we've been mentioned in some books and stuff, but I definitely want to put some sort of thing together. And I think Brent's on board with that too.
I think it would be nice to
especially
have a book, like we have the other books in
like
women's soccer.
Yeah, like a book or something.
Yeah, a book would be nice because that would be kind of like the story, right? The story, as you want to call it. The ups and downs.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
we have
media. We have that documentary that I was involved in. Sam's been involved in a lot of stuff. Like we just have so much history, and I want to put it all together in one book.
Yeah.
So our kids can read it. Oh my gosh.
It is remarkable. It is remarkable how everything got to this level. And also how you guys together, came in and created this little bubble, right? You want to call it a bubble. And then because it was created in that sense, a closing bubble, but it actually excited everybody else. And now we have more impact. It went from that to an impactful thing,
Yes.
Well, I'm very proud of you.
Beautiful.
I'm very proud of Brent. And obviously, Sam. We've had Sam on here several times, and I think you guys have done a tremendous job. You guys should applaud yourselves, and also at the same time, you guys are at the forefront of many dreams. And like you said, this is just a starting point. It's just like a spark, because at some point, to your point, some of these girls are going to go into college, and maybe there will be tackle football in college, and then eventually, it's going to be no different than the NCAA level, and then you jump into the NFL, and hopefully, one of these leagues, the WNFC or the WFA, become that NFL.
I agree. I think that's what my vision is. That's what I see. And I'm always right when it comes to, like, predicting, like, numbers. I'm like, this season we're going to have this many girls. This season, and it's always, like, dead on. So I'm like, okay, this vision better be correct.
Chris, is it dead on scary, or is it dead on, oh, yeah, this is cool?
dead on scary and cool all at the same time. It's like a good adrenaline excitement. Just like, honestly. I get so nervous just like I'm about to play a football game. Every time those girls step on the field, I feel like I'm like, I don't know if it's reliving it or just, it's like I get the same butterflies. I get nervous. It's really intense, but I think that's just part of the growth.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and like I said, I wanted to bring you on here because this is huge news, and at the same time, to thank you, Brett and Sam and everybody involved, the coaches, the volunteers, the parents. It took a village, as they say, right? to get it to the youth conference level. So shout out to all of you guys.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this goes, and I'm sure you'll talk to me again, because I'll be like, guess what? We just got this state and this state, and you know, and then with the youth conference,
no,
I would
I
like
mean,
to share the experience.
Hopefully, I'll be around, Chris, to see this the next level, the college level, as you said, because you know, God only knows what will happen, but hopefully, we'll be around to that stage where the next stage is, and it's gonna be rewarding because that's what we wanted everybody to be, and the girls deserve that, and also you know. The sport deserves that in terms of the youth tackle league mentality.
Yes, it does for sure. Like, it's about time.
Oh, yeah. All right, Chris, thank you for coming in. I know you're busy, and looking forward to catching up with you in the future as to how this the conference, once it's going to be this fall, right? So this fall starts off, and
yes.
Then you said there's an off season, and then we'll go back to a full season. In what, summertime?
Yeah, in the spring we'll have our regular Utah girls tackle football season, and then after that, hopefully everybody will transfer over to the Ute Conference. I feel like they will because of the excitement.
Awesome. So we're going to keep tabs. Utah Girls Football League on Facebook. Utah League, UTGFL, I believe on Twitter, right?
Yes.
And what's the other handle on? You have it on TikTok too, right?
Yeah, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Just you can Google us.
Okay, perfect. All right, Chris, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it. Safe travels. I hope you're enjoying your new environment there with your new land, and you know, work as I say to create some cool stuff, and then eventually we'll see you on the travel the RV, as you said.
Yeah, that's going to happen. I know it, because I'm like, after we build our house, then what are we going to do with this nice RV? And my girlfriend's like, we're going to take it, and you're going to go help start those other leagues for the girls.
Well, so. You know what? As the brain would say, Chris, we're going to go take over the world, Pinky. That's what you're heading.
Yep, exactly. I'm like, it needs to happen. Tackle football for girls.
Awesome. All right, have a great night. Appreciate you coming on. And then we'll touch base hopefully in the future here. And hopefully next season too, because it'll be one of those interesting seasons after the season ends in spring. It's full-blown, so we might catch up then and see how that's going. But I appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, and I appreciate you guys and everything you do for women's and girls' football, getting our names out there. I appreciate it.
No problem. Have a great evening. Safe travels. Get some rest. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
All right, guys. That was Chris Sacco, co-founder of the Utah Girls Football League. They just we were trying to get her on earlier when the news broke out that they're going to the youth conference this fall. It'll start off, and then the next spring, the last season of the Utah Girls Football League is going to happen, and then the next fall after that, it's going to be a full-blown Utes conference. So it's very, very exciting times for youth tackle football in terms of the girls' side of things, and then actually getting girls' tackle football teams in terms of high school between boys and girls, just like you do in, you know, in soccer and basketball, just like you do in lacrosse or lacrosse and other sports. So let's bring in the oracle of women's tackle football. That is Mark Simone, the backseat coach. Mark, pretty cool, don't you think? Go to the youth conference. Now you got a little bit more support, more pull statewide. Wow, this is you got to applaud them for kicking it off 10 years ago, and now all of a sudden we're penetrating a big time, you know, college conference.
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, it's been a long time in the making, and we all really have to salute just the fortitude of the people that started the league. I can understand that, you know, when they started, they probably had no idea as to like how wide an impact that the mere existence of that league would have. But the It's really the fact that the league has, like, persevered and grown and did not get taken down by financial troubles or just, you know, all the things that might end a league like that. And it was so important, right? Because if you're the type of person who wants to have tackle football, like in high school, for example, like if the Utah Girls Tackle Football League, you know, didn't keep succeeding, we wouldn't be at this point right now. It wouldn't be possible to even talk about it right now, right? Say if that league had folded after a couple, 3 years, there's no way that we'd be seeing this sort of push in states like, you know, California and Texas, as they mentioned. I don't think we'd be seeing flag football even as widely accepted as it is now for girls. So it's really remarkable what they've done, and maybe they're too close up to, you know, the work that they're doing to see how wide the scope is. But it's huge. It's enormous.
And we were just talking about it. She's excited because she's thinking once that happens, specifically in Utah, you know, you're going to get to Texas or California. But, like, my point is you already have the Tammy Moores, right, coaching in the boys' high school realms, right? The Nenji Martins were coaching in the boys' high school realms, right? So there's already women's tackle football players coaching boys at the high school level. So imagine, you know, that high school saying, hey, we're going to, you know, equal out by having a girls tackle football league. Those coaches already have coaching experience. So they just kind of slide into, you know, coaching the girls side. And they've already had the experience playing in the semi-pros, in other words. So yeah, it should, in other words, it's like a fire starter. In other words, it's going to flame it up, you know?
Oh yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. There's going to be room for, you know, a lot of former players to coach and be involved in what is an industry. Okay. Let's be real, you know, high school football isn't just, you know, some kind of activity. All right. It's an industry that, I mean, there's a lot of mechanics in it, and it requires people to be very involved to make it successful. So, you know, that'll be no different for girls football.
Yeah, and the beauty of it is all this progress, you know, the Gordons have done, Chris has done, plus, like she mentioned, you know, it's been coaches and volunteers and parents, and so it's taken a village 10 years later to, you know, to get this league or this program into a big conference like the Utes conference. So you got to applaud them.
Absolutely. They created a blueprint for others to follow. And that's a huge thing.
Yeah, it's big time. Let me see here. Where do we want to start, Mark? Do we want to start? See here. Let's bring in Terry. Coach Terry Lister. And if you guys haven't dived into Terry's podcast, Quincy Davis, St. Louis Slam coach, with some good insights. And so you catch, I believe it's episode 54 and TL podcast, and that's at the Hub. So you get to click right there and get the interview right there with Quincy Davis, right, TL?
You got it. Yep. He's a phenomenal coach and person. It was a pleasure interviewing him, and so you are correct. TL Talks on YouTube, and it is episode 54. I appreciate the shout out.
No, we got to do the plug in because Coach Quincy is awesome. Now, Terry, you're awesome.
Okay. Yeah, well, I do what I can.
All right, that gym work's paying off for you, so you're looking handsome. That's all I gotta say. All right, Mark. I did go to the 7-Eleven this weekend, this past Sunday, so I did get to experience the Slurpee that Brian Sweeney does, and so I am kind of excited. I do have one in my freezer right now. That will be the entertainment Slurpee for me on June 23rd, the WNFC 9 Cup. So let's dive into here. Mary Woodward, I did send a message to her and says, can you please shock the world? And she said, we're going to do our best. That was the message. So I'm pretty sure she's ready.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Mississippi's defense goes, I mean, definitely, I personally really love their defensive backs and their linebackers. I think they're pretty strong there, and they're going to get a workout. So if they do shock the world, the likes of Woodward and others are going to have to be in there getting breaking up passes and maybe getting turnovers. So bring it, you know. They really have no choice. It'll be a hard game to win if they can't get a turnover too.
Terry, tell us a little bit about the offensive line's challenge for Mississippi here. Texas Elite, big people on the front line there. I think Rashawn knows what they're all about, but do you feel like this Panther offensive line is going to contain and then give her time?
So the short answer is yes. Mississippi has a good team overall, and part of that good team is a good offensive line. So Texas is very good. They don't have many weaknesses. Their defensive line is good, you know, across the board. They have, you know, Guidry blitzing off the edge, obviously OG, the legend at defensive end, and solid defensive tackles, and the other defensive end is good as well. So no weaknesses really, but as far as them combating, you know, Mississippi's O-line versus them, I think that they'll do a good job. Of course, there's no perfect game, so there will be times where blitzes get through and Gore gets hit. The question is, and this is what I've been talking to with some people in WNFC this week, is how clean of a game can Mississippi play? Because there's been a couple games this year where Mississippi has turned the ball over three or four times. And they can't do that versus Texas and win. And so that's going to be a huge storyline about if Mississippi can take care of the ball and not turn it over. They have a really legitimate shot of being the first team to beat Texas, but that's easier said than done. I think it's worth mentioning that Rashawn Gore has not turned the ball over in the playoffs thus far, which is very impressive through two games. And so hopefully she can keep that trend going on Sunday.
Mark, if you're the Texas Elite offense, you got to deal with Woodward, Bradford, Mallory, Edwards, Williams, Andrews, Jenkins. So I guess, you know, we normally say what Texas, you really don't mention any names because you know they're all there, but is this probably the best Texas will face this time around, and knowing these folks, knowing that this is for all the marbles, do you think this they're going to elevate their game even more?
Well, I mean, they'll have to. I will say that I think that this defense is probably the best that Texas has faced this year. They actually did square off in week one, and so that was a long time ago. And it's actually seems like quite befitting that, you know, this championship game is a rematch of a matchup from week one. But, you know, a lot has happened. I think that defense has probably gelled quite a lot from that first loss that they took against Texas, which the score was 35-12. So, I mean, let's look at that. Texas is, you know, they're averaging 39 points a game. If you're Mississippi's defense, you cannot allow 39 points to get scored upon you. I don't think that's going to do it. They have to get that point value down. I mean, I think if they keep Texas in the you know, in the 20s, they'll have a shot to win. I really can't see Texas scoring more than 30 points and having Mississippi win. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. You know, and if you're Texas, you know, this is a good defense they're facing, but the fact that Texas has a balanced attack with, you know, rushing and passing, it was almost equal on the year, like just shy of 1,000 yards rushing on the year and just a little over 1,000 yards passing on the year, which means, you know, the Mississippi defense have to excel at pitting what kind of play is coming at them, right? Because they're going to hit you with a run or hit you with a pass. We all know Brittany Bushman, quarterback for Texas, is accurate. She's an accurate passer, and she gets good protection from that offensive line. Has thrown 16 touchdowns, just 3 interceptions, so doesn't make a lot of mistakes throwing the ball. So the defense for Mississippi are going to have to find some way to force Bushman into some mistakes, maybe turn the ball over once. They have to, you know, either they have to shut down either the passing game or the rushing game. If, you know, if they can't do one of those things, I don't think they'll be able to hold back the floodgates of points scored from this Texas offense.
I agree. Good, valid points. Those are some of the things that I wrote down too. Terry, if you're Rashida Young, Virginia Jackson, mm-hmm. and then Natalie Nix, you got a lot of pressure here to show out?
Yes and no. So obviously playing in the championship is a lot of pressure. Playing against Texas, who has never lost, is pressure. But I feel like I know Rashida, Regina, and Nat pretty well as players and as people. So they're, I feel like Mississippi is uniquely qualified. they're a nice mixture. They have an awesome coaching staff. They're one of the coaching staffs I was most impressed with this season. And their athletes are just not only really good athletes, like really dynamic athletes, but also their mentalities are just really like competitive to the point where they are not going to like go into the game intimidated, I don't think, when they play Texas. And let me tell you, firsthand knowledge, that one of the keys of playing against Texas and possibly beating Texas is how you start the game and where you're at mentally. If you start the game, you know, intimidated or nervous, and they're able to punch you in the mouth first, that's the first step of them winning the game. And so if Mississippi starts the game aggressive and those receivers you just mentioned ball out and they're not nervous, they're not scared, they're just ready to compete and play a really good game, that'll be the first step for Mississippi to have a chance at winning the game. So I really do have a lot of confidence in those athletes, athletically and mentally, that they're ready to play Texas again.
I think, to your point, Terry, the mental state has to be that, because there's no other option, right? You're walking in, they're the champs, you got to beat them. So you got to set the tone. Otherwise, they will set the tone, and it's pretty much lights out if they set the tone.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds simple, but it really is like that self-explanatory. Like if you start the game hesitant or you have a hard time getting going on offense, you know, that's what Texas needs. Texas needs you to play scared or play intimidated, and then they can punch you in the mouth first, and then eventually they'll start scoring. And if you can't match those touchdowns, it gets out of hand fast. So I think it is worth mentioning that there's been a couple games this year where Texas, like, had a close score at halftime. The score was close versus Denver. The score was close versus Mississippi the first game of the year. And so since that has been the case in a couple of games, I think that it's not too far-fetched to say that this first half of the championship will also be close. So then the question is, can you play a complete game, and how do you do after halftime when you make coaching adjustments, and can you make it close the entire game and give yourself a chance to win? That'll be the big question.
All right, Mark, Can you get too much ego? Tara Thomas, as an example, lights out all season. She's probably one of the focal points for this season. Can you be too much of a high and maybe crash in this game?
I mean, that's always a possibility. But and then the question is, you know, it's just about how you play and perform on the field and whether or not you're doing your job and whether or not you can, you know, keep your game simple and not let, you know, not take undue risks and all of those things. For me, I don't really feel is really a big factor in this game. Of course, you want to proceed with confidence. Every player does. And I think it's very important to Terry's point that, you know, Mississippi comes out with confidence, with aggression the first couple of series are going to be very, very big. We don't know who's going to get the ball first. That's, I think, a very big thing in this game. And, you know, what the teams do with that first possession, you know, may very well set the tone for the entire game.
Terry, do we have to be worried about Satterwhite, who's been very impressive all season, or do we just go back to the focal point of Jackson and Landry? I mean, who do we, like, pinpoint to try to, like, disrupt this offense, basically?
Yeah, I have narrowed down, like, if I was playing against Texas in the championship, I would focus on Tammy Moore, the left guard. She's the best offensive lineman on Texas, in my opinion. She's very good. She's very aggressive. When she pulls, she has bad intentions. Then as far as skill position players, you have Tara Thomas, who's a game breaker at running back. Brittany Satterwhite, who is a really shifty, good receiver that can make people miss. And then Maria Jackson, who's arguably the best receiver in the league, if not the nation. So those four players I would focus on personally. That's not to discredit players like Liz Landry and Amanda Heilman. I mean, their whole team's good. Brittany Bushman's a Hall of Famer. Like, their whole offense is good. Their whole team's good, and they're well coached. So all those players are good. But as far as game planning, I think if you focus on the four players I just mentioned and you're able to stop them and contain them and neutralize them, you have a great shot at winning the game.
And that's what I mean. That's my point. It's like it's so, you know, to focus on what you got to take off a leg. In other words, that's what I'm saying. It's a whole body. Now we got to try to chop off one leg. And hopefully that, you know, that's going to give you an advantage, right? Take you an advantage. Mark, if you're Rashawn Gore, we don't know what, you know, shoulder injury before that in the playoffs, was playing still with that. We don't know if it's healed at this point. If you're Texas, Mark, is that something you're going to, like, try to crush on her, you know what I mean, get through and throw her to the ground and try to tear down that shoulder, in other words?
Well, I think they'd be wanting to do that regardless of any sort of possible injuries because, you know, Texas's defensive game plan probably centers on Gore, all right? She is the center of their offensive game plan. You know, Mississippi doesn't have a balanced attack. They rely on the pass. And therefore, they rely on their quarterback to make big plays. You know, they only didn't even rush for 500 yards over the course of the season. And for, you know, most of those yards, that was actually Gore running the ball. She had like 230 yards rushing. So the bulk of Mississippi's offense has been the pass. Gore is like over 1,200 yards, almost 1,300 yards, which is by far the most in the league this year. So disrupting Gore's, game is the defensive game plan for Texas. There's no two ways about it. If they can hit her, just deflect some balls, get her to scramble, get those sacks, then it's probably going to be a win for Dallas, right? Because that's it. That's their offense right there. They've got a lot of other nice players, but the ball always goes through the quarterback's hands.
Mm-hmm. Terry, if that scenario would happen, Gore gets taken out, you got Regina's got to step in, right? Is she going to be confident enough to step in? And then will Sheriff and Lacey and Bassett, they have to step up their game if that would happen? I mean, they would have to play a high-level game to complement Jackson as an example, not including Young and Nix, but you would have to have some other complementary receivers to make up some of that situation, because Jackson also can run. Even if she's in the pocket like Gore, she's able to spread the ball and run. But, you know, who's going to take the role of a Regina Jackson? Will it be Sheriff or Lacey or Bassett if that would happen?
Yeah, there's two things. So the first thing is what Mark was just talking about. I think it would be wise to take a trip down memory lane, because they played each other in week one. So since I watched that game in its entirety, I remember how it went. I think the final score was like 35-13, and Nat and Nick scored both the touchdowns. But something that stuck out to me was Rashawn Gore was able to pick up a lot of yards with her legs. So they'd be in shotgun. She'd look for a pass. She'd see a lane take off in some crucial play. I mean, third and fourth down, like picking up huge first downs in really tight situations with her legs. And so that's going to be something to look for on Sunday, her to do the same thing. To answer your question, Mississippi's, when I say they're uniquely qualified to play Texas, this is one of the reasons why. They have a, how do you say this, Mark, like a boil of riches. I don't know if that's the right term. But like
embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, embarrassment of riches, that's the term. So having Rashawn Gore as your starting quarterback, and even having the option of having Regina Jackson come in if something were to happen to Gore, is just crazy, because you're basically swapping an elite athlete for another elite athlete. So the answer is yes. Regina Jackson plays with a great deal of confidence. She's a very good athlete. She can throw the ball, run the ball. And if that were to happen, Mississippi wouldn't necessarily, you know, lose the game because of that, in my opinion. So I think that wouldn't be like, okay, well, Mississippi is at a competitive disadvantage now because Gore's out and Regina is a quarterback. I think Lacey is a person that we should highlight because her speed is crazy. I'm not sure if you guys have watched the playoff games from Mississippi, but her speed is just
nuts. That's why I brought her up.
Yeah. So like her speed is a problem. And so I think she's a good person to keep in mind because, like you said, you have to have a balanced attack to stop Texas. You can't let them gas you with the run game or tear you up with the pass game. But then also the flip side of that is you have to be able to move the ball and score points to stay in the game against them. So one of the ways to do that is with a fast running back like Lacey. So I think the combination of Gore passing and running, Lacey with her speed, they have English Bennett, who's really good also between the tackles. I'm not sure if Candace Davis is going to play or not. I think she had an injury, so hopefully she'll be back, but I'm not sure about that. And then they have several good receivers. I mean, the three receivers we just talked about, that's not even mentioning, I think her name's Alyssa McCarron. She's a rookie, and she's really, really good also. I mean, I've seen her make crazy, crazy sideline catches this season as a rookie. So they just have talent everywhere. And I think that they're in good shape no matter what happens. The only way this game goes south is if they have a whole bunch of turnovers, or they don't make good adjustments at halftime. So I'm really excited, man. I mean, I can't wait for Sunday because it's going to be a great game, and I'm eager to see how it plays out.
Mark, so the keys to the matchup here before we end it here, limit your turnovers and score in the blue zone. Literally every time, because you cannot afford to score in the blue zone, right? It's just the way it is.
You said it. Yeah. If, you know, Mississippi in particular gets turned away from the red zone with no points, that's just not gonna cut it. They have to convert big time.
Yeah, and then I don't know if their kicking game's good enough, but even 3 points is better than 0 points. So they're going to have to really figure it out. So Cameron Beal, Mr. Lister, Cameron Beal, you've dove into his head. This is a big moment for him, Coach, right? This is a big moment because you're trying to take down the O.J. Jenkins. The O.J. Jenkins. That's like a big, big statement.
I mean, Texas has never lost in 3 or 4 years of, you know, this league being created, and they've won every championship. They've never lost. They've had like 2 close games in their history, which is crazy to say, but there's a reason they've never lost. And so it's definitely a tall task for Mississippi, but I'm super happy that Mississippi did make it back to the championship. Cause like I said, I think they're uniquely qualified to match up with Texas athletically. And scheme wise, they are a good matchup for Texas also, because Texas's defense, in my opinion, is built to stop the run and kind of bully the receivers and, you know, press and make them get off presses and do stuff that most teams can't do. So if you're able to do those things and get off presses and spread Texas out, which most teams can't do, now they can't do what they want to do. And so that's why it's such an intriguing matchup.
All right. So we're getting ready for the Nine Cup. Go to WNFCfootball.com. The Nine Cup will have to be paid for on pay-per-view. I believe it's $15. So you can go right there to WScore. Go to WNFCfootball.com. You get to click the link there and get yourself set up for the June 23rd through the June 25th. And the itinerary is Friday, Nine Cup kickoff, the prep rally. You got Media Day on Saturday, plus the Adult Women's Pro Skill Camp. You also have the Herd Game Flag Football Showcase. You also got the WNFC Fan Fest as well, and then the Celebrity Flag Football Game. And then you got the, on Sunday, you have the Breakfast and Awards Show in the morning. You got the Varsity Girls Flag Football sponsored by Adidas. You got the WNFC Adidas All-Pro Game. And then, obviously, the Nine Cup Championship. All right. Let's go into, you guys, before we get into the WFA, let me get my list here. I think it's the finalist list, if I'm correct. So, Terry, we have a couple finalist lists on the offensive side of the ball. So, do you feel like who's going to win that award? You know, who's going to win that finalist award for the offensive?
You know who's up for it?
So let me break it down here, because I'm gonna look it over right now. Give me a second here. I got to go into my little Twitter lab.
Yes, sir. Twitter lab. I have the playoffs pulled up, but I don't have the finalists pulled up. My bad.
Oh, no problem. That's fine. I'm gonna look into it right now. It's gonna be Jennifer King for the team Saucy, and it's gonna be Callie Branson directing Team Drip. That was the notice that I got. So let me just look into it here. I'm breaking it down because I thought I had it up and I kind of clicked it on the wrong size. So here we go. All right. So I have the offensive players of the year, Ballard of the Prodigy, Smith of the Atlanta Phoenix, Scott of the Houston Mambas, Gutierrez of the Rebellion, and Maria Jackson of the Spartans. So so who do we debate with, or Terry, who do we go with? Do we give it to Maria Jackson once again, or are any of the other four worthy?
You can take that one, Mark. That one's tough. I think it's crap.
Yeah, that is pretty tough. All great players, obviously. That's why they're on the list. Man, it's hard to go against Jackson because she just looks unbeatable. Like all the time, right? If I were to give it to anybody else, though, I think I'd probably give it to Gutierrez. I feel like she had a really good season with the Rebellion, and you know, she's just so steady, right? So I definitely think she would make a very good choice.
Terry,
yeah,
if you took Maria out of it. Who would be your other?
Yeah. So the only thing, only difference I would say from what Mark said is I'd probably go with Jasmine Ballard, just because like her stats and how consistent she is, even though teams know that she's the main weapon, is just so impressive to me that she has that kind of production year, week in and week out. Didn't she lead the league in rushing this year?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. I mean, she's really good, man. Like, she can do it all. She can go between the tackles. She can hit the edge. She can stiff arm people. She can run away from people. So I agree with Mark that AG has had an awesome year, and she definitely should be in the conversation. But I think that Ballard also deserves some merit. So I wouldn't be mad if any of those three got picked. But it would be nice to see a non-Texas player get the award.
I'm with you guys with the consensus. It would be Ballard for me as well, and then Gutierrez. Because I think Ballard, to your point, Terry, Ballard literally carries the Prodigy. Where I think in San Diego, Adriana is more of a second threat, you know, to the quarterback status in that sense. So not that she's not deserving of it, but I think that would be the case in terms of Maria Jackson, obviously, probably the favorite, right, at this point.
Yeah, I just looked it up. Jasmine Ballard had 200 more rushing yards than anybody else. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so she literally was the Prodigy offense in a lot of ways in terms of playmaking and stuff like that. All right, Mark, MVP. So let's go here. So we have Galicia, who got injured. Okay. You got Rashawn Gore, who's in the final. You have Brittany Bushman, who's in the final. And then Brown from Atlanta, Melissa Brown.
Well, I think Brown was really great. I mean, just a notable performance. But I got to give it to Gore. It's made such a big difference to Mississippi to have Gore on that squad. Now, you know, it's just like I don't necessarily feel like Gore has the greatest numbers, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, I feel like I'd want to see better from an MVP. But, you know, Mississippi is in the title match. And, you know, Gore is like one of the biggest reasons that they're there. So for me, it's Rashawn Gore.
Terry?
I agree. Yeah. I mean, like Mark said, her stats don't look great because she had 11 interceptions, but I mean, she had over 200 yards more passing than anybody else in the league. And her being at quarterback and directing that offense has had great success. I mean, they're 7-1 going into the championship, and she's been a weapon all season with her arm and her legs. And so I think as far as total body of work and Mississippi's results, Gore's the easy decision from my perspective.
I say Gore because – without Gore, Mississippi doesn't arrive here. So that would be my most valuable player in that sense.
Yeah, you can make that argument for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, with Bushman, we already know they're going to arrive here. I mean, based on the output and the balance attack, where with Gore, it took her to get the Panthers to the finals. That's the way I look at it.
Agreed.
All right. So, Mark, the shutdown DB of the year. So let's go into that. What is it? Lusson. And then you got Wright from Atlanta, Richardson from the Spartans, Lay from the Prodigy, and Wells from the Houston Mambas.
Well, I'm just going to, you know, I guess play favorites. I really like Angie Wells. I just like the way she plays. She's made like big tackles and, you know, big plays in big moments for Houston. And I just feel like credit should be given, you know. They had a pretty solid year, and I thought, you know, Wells played well this season. And, you know, down the stretch.
Terry?
Yeah, I mean, Wells is very good. She had three picks this year. Lusane had four picks and three pick sixes, which is kind of crazy. So it's kind of hard for me to ignore that with Brittany Lusane from the Rebellion. I'm a big fan of Tashawn Lee. She's awesome for Prodigy.
Yep.
And
sure.
I haven't watched much of Diamond Wright with Phoenix, admittedly. I haven't watched that much Atlanta games this season because some of the opponents they were playing weren't really competitive. But based on what I know and the stats, I would go with Brittany Lusane from the Rebellion.
No question. I think Brittany nails it. I mean, just she stands out above everybody else. Plus, I believe it was over three return touchdowns and 162 returning yards and four interceptions. So, I'd say Lusane, too. Lusane should be, the best DB shutdown in the league. All right. I think that's it, right? Did we miss anything? Defensive, offensive? Did I say defensive? Well, there he goes. Okay, I'm sorry. I did miss defensive. Defensive, Terry, Gaines from Las Vegas, Kraft from your team, Patton from, I believe, the Avengers. You got Weathered from the Spartans, and then Thomas from Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a page out of Mark's book and be a homer on this one and go with Amber Kraft. Amber Kraft is just an absolute monster. I think you guys are all aware of this, but I know Amber Kraft and I've coached her and been around her and obviously watched her play live for her whole time in Denver here. So to watch her effect on the team, what she brings to the team from a leadership perspective, making sure all the linebackers know what they're doing off the field, with Zoom meetings and stuff, and then on the field, being able to execute the game plan, make tackles, corral and people like Tara Thomas, like she literally can do it all. So I'm just so impressed with her as a person and a player. It would be hard for me not to give her the nod, but that's not to say that some other players aren't deserving. The girl, I think her name is Patton from Florida, right? She's also a monster. I think she plays safety, but when I watched a Florida game, she literally was everywhere. Like, I don't know how many tackles she had, but it seemed like she made every tackle. And so that's also impressive. But I think Amber Kraft being third in the league in tackles, 7.5 tackles for loss. I mean, she just she's just amazing. So I don't know. I'm going to go homer pick, Amber Kraft.
I'm going to agree with you. I think she is the standout. I'll agree with that.
What do you think, Mark?
Oh yeah,
am I crazy?
Absolutely. I mean, that would be my choice as well. Again, not to say that the others did not have good seasons, not great seasons. They did. I just feel like Kraft is really kind of one of the linchpins to Denver's defense. So on top of all the great plays that she's made, I think the role that she has on the team, like definitely, just adds that more to what she's done this year.
Yeah. Like we were just saying that without Gore, Mississippi probably doesn't have the success they've had this season on offense, right? Well, you could say the same thing for Amber Kraft's defense. Like just realistically, it doesn't happen. Those players are that rare. So
right. Absolutely.
Just realistically.
All right. So you guys got the lowdown right there, WNFCfootball.com. You can get the champion, the Nine Cup Final. I believe it's $14.99 W score. So you get it right there, the link at WNFCfootball.com/W score. And then you can also go there and get all the events and everything that's going to be happening this weekend, starting on the 23rd through the 25th. At Frisco in Texas. So awesome. All right. So let's get into it. WFA Pro and Division II matchups here. Terry, is this Jamie Gall's season? Is Jamie Gall going to make this happen for the Slam to take us to the final and go up against Allison Cahill? As it stands through 8 weeks, one Cahill, Gall number two. So will we see 1 and 2 in the final is the question.
I believe we will. You know, I do my little fun rankings for every week for what I think the power rankings are for both leagues, WFA Pro and WNFC. And I've had Texas and Mississippi 1 and 2 all, you know, most of the season. I had Boston as number one and then Cali as number two for a while, with St. Louis being number three. But after I took a closer look and realized that St. Louis hasn't given up a point all season, then it was very apparent to me that St. Louis is just on a different level. So I think it's very likely. If I was a betting man, and I wish it was possible to bet in women's football, I would definitely put a decent amount of money on it being a St. Louis-Boston final.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, Jamie's moment here, she's got to get through Chantel Nino Wiggins. Can she do it? Take the slam.
Yeah, well, you
take
know.
Down Kelly Ward.
This is one of the things I think that's very interesting about this first round matchup. I'll just say that, you know, I don't think Minnesota or Houston make much of a match with St. Louis. I think it's very clear that St. Louis is stronger than those teams. But I feel like the Cali War is kind of a bit of a wild card. I feel like if anybody is going to, you know, beat St. Louis on this side of the bracket, it'll be Cali. It's just a matter if, like, Cali can get their ish together, right? They have the athletes. They, you know, I feel like they have a lot of weapons. But I just don't feel like they, you know, are consistent performers. And you got to have all your stuff together to beat a team like the Slam, who have been dominant for the entire year. Their defense has let up 0 points, and we all know that Cali's capable of scoring points. And I think they will score points, actually, against the Slam, but you know, certainly give Slam the edge. I expect both of those quarterbacks to really be, you know, front and center. Their play is going to help, you know, determine the outcome of the game. If either one of them has a bad game, you know, it doesn't bode well for their team in terms of winning.
Terry, if you're Cali, you've used this Wiggins-Guzman combination. Maybe that will work against the Slam defense, but, you know, because it's two different looks.
I mean, that's definitely their hope. I don't know, man. Like, Cali losing to Minnesota at the end of the year told me a lot about where Cali's at, in my opinion. The fact that they weren't able to hold on and win that game, and they let Minnesota come back and win at the end, that kind of gives me an idea of where they're actually at, right? So, like, St. Louis played Minnesota twice. The scores were like 24-0 and 20-0. They didn't score at all versus St. Louis. So, to your point, I think Cali can score on St. Louis, but scoring on St. Louis doesn't win you the game. Beating St. Louis wins you the game. So, like, for me, it's just the difference of, you know, if St. Louis beat Minnesota 24-0, they play Cali, and in my opinion, the score is something like 24-7. So it's kind of tomato-tomato. There's a difference of a touchdown, but it doesn't really matter. It's still a dominant win, and St. Louis advances. So I feel pretty confident that's what will happen, especially with home field advantage.
Mark, D3 competition, forfeit wins. Maybe that hinders the Cali War because their schedule wasn't that aggressive.
Right. We have to see that how many games they actually play during this season. What was it? Let's see.
They went 4-1, so they played 5-6.
So, yeah, four games they played, you know, one of them against a Division III opponent, and, you know, so, you know, I don't know if it, you know, it's not an advantage to have played so few games, I think, because
to Terry's point, that, Mark, Minnesota
yeah.
was their only pro tough competition, and they lost. And this will be their next toughest competition that, against St. Louis in terms of a pro level.
Yeah, that's right. Game of the season that they're going to get, the worst matchup they could probably get. They have to travel, and they have to travel to St. Louis, right? So that mm-hmm. was a big collapse. I mean, to Terry's point, they collapsed against Minnesota. And that's the kind of ish, you know, I was referring to when, you know, I made my content. Like, can they get their
yep.
ish together?
Yeah.
That's really the big thing in this matchup. So they have a huge challenge, you know, really more than just facing the Slam, which is hard enough. It's just making sure that your whole team is, you know, on the same page and have each other's backs, you know. They can't give up. If you give up, why show up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Terry, if you're Minnesota, you know, you got Kelly against Jock, Christina Jocks. Austin really needs this game, and I mean really needs this game. It's like a revenge game for them. Where Minnesota, you're coming off that Cali War high. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this is a home game. You don't want to lose it. You want to move on to the playoffs. So who's feeling the more pressure? Is it Houston to overcome?
Yeah, it's got to be Houston because they're the away team, and this is their first playoff game in WSA Pro, and they've already lost to Minnesota. So the pressure's on them to redeem themselves. What I know is I've heard straight from their mouths that this is the game that they wanted. They wanted to get a rematch, mm-hmm. second shot at Minnesota, and so that's what they got. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool because that isn't always the case. You know, when you have a tough loss against somebody, sometimes you don't get another shot at them. And so I'm happy for Houston that they get to rectify that or at least get a chance to.
So it's going to be a great clash because it's kind of a rematch clash, and we already know what the first outcome was, and Houston kind of like struggled in terms of, you know, scoring in that sense. Mark, I'm going to skip Boston and D.C. because we already know that, and we already know the matches. You guys can go back and replay episode, I believe it's 449, if I'm correct, with Adrian Smith. We'll get the breakdown there as well. But anyways, Boston, D.C., rivalry of rivalries. We discussed it on our last podcast as well. Alabama Fire and Pittsburgh. Mark, you said this is Alabama's moment. They're playing at home. The question mark is, will the passion arrive with the full roster? I think that's also the question.
Right. You know, Pittsburgh lost a couple of very impactful players mid-season. Marcelina Chavez, who was their starting quarterback, and we also know her as an experienced receiver and rusher in the earlier part of her career. So a very experienced player, very knowledgeable player, out for a few weeks. And in the last game of the season between Pittsburgh and Boston, I did see that Chavez came in for one play. She lined up as a wide receiver, I believe. However, she was delivered a lateral and threw the ball downfield for an incompletion. So there was a Marcelina sighting at that game. I expect her to be on the field for this game. Now, so obviously that's very exciting news for the Pittsburgh Passion. I feel as well, you know, as good as Sissy George played with Chavez out, that this is, you know, Chavez means that there's another big weapon on the field. And it's not like they're going to not use Sissy George in other situations. So, you know, a few more weapons to play with for Pittsburgh.
I agree. I think their biggest the biggest challenge will be, Terry, can they contain mm-hmm. Kelly Smith? Their biggest challenge.
Oh, yeah. So it's an intriguing matchup. I believe these teams never played each other before. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, so first ever meeting. The game's in Alabama, which gives them a little bit of an advantage. But Pittsburgh's, like, they're in a top caliber team. So, like, them having a away playoff game doesn't necessarily mean they're going to have lower numbers or missing players and stuff like that. So I expect Pittsburgh to come full force with their full coaching staff and all their players. If Marcelino Chavez is playing quarterback, that makes a difference. How much of a difference remains to be seen. If Mark said she played one snap last game, it makes you wonder, you know, how close to 100% is she? And if the answer is 70%, there's a big difference between an athlete like her at 70% versus 100% or 90%. Depending on what that percentage is, that has a huge impact on the game. But to your point, Oscar, stopping Kelly Smith is easier said than done. Alabama has a really good team, a good offensive line, a good coach. They don't have crazy numbers, but they're just a really good team. They've always been that way. So is St. Louis. So they're a good team. They have it's at their home field, and it's a really intriguing matchup. Stopping Kelly Smith is really tough. She's a crazy athlete. She has speed. She can make people miss. She can stiff arm people, you name it. So stopping their scheme and Kelly Smith is easier said than done. So I'm interested to see how well Pittsburgh does that, because I would have given Alabama the edge, but since Pittsburgh kind of played Boston competitively recently, that makes me question everything. That makes me, like, the wheels start turning. And so I'm like, well, shit. I mean, who knows now? I mean, I can't wait to see. I think it's the most intriguing matchup of round one in WFA altogether. So I can't wait.
Yeah, for sure. And this is the one that we are looking for, because Alabama wins here, they get the monsters of the Northeast, and we'll see how they fare there. And they got to travel to the monsters of the Northeast. Not that the Divas can't upset. Just be very clear there, Mark. Not that the Divas can't upset, but we could, you know, potentially see a Boston Alabama at this point based on our predictions. All right,
you might be wanting to say that to Amanda Congiality, not Mark. So just a warning.
No. Amanda knows the obstacle, Terry. I'm not telling her anything new. She knows the obstacle.
You should.
You know, he knows the obstacle. Yeah. Let's see. We got 10 minutes. Let's break down D2 real quick. So, Terry, OKC, if you are Jasmine Quesada and Alexis Singleton, and, of course, Sierra Adams of the Sun City Stealth, this is your moment, and can you take down the Lady Force?
Yeah, I would say that it's a long shot based on how well the Lady Force have played all season. But, like I said in previous podcasts, Lady Force had a game late in the season where the final score was very puzzling to me. That was against the Austin Outlaws, 14-9, in the second to last week. That game was puzzling to me. I actually texted the coach for OKC and asked him about that. Let me pull that up for you real quick so we can get some inside scoop here. He said we were not focused and took Austin for granted. I do credit Austin and their coaching staff. I will say I got my players' attention, letting them know that you can be beat, a lesson learned. So based on what he said, that sounds like it's full steam ahead, and they should handle the Sun City Stealth. But that doesn't mean Sun City isn't going to show up. But if they play like they played most of the season, I think OKC will handle them.
Agreed. Mark, everything rides with Nebraska against Austin, but they do have the two set back, which is Wright and Bell, and it will take them, I think, a really good game from both of them. More of a running game attitude for Nebraska than a passing game. So, you know, that's their goal right now, is to try to disrupt that. If you're Austin, I mean, you got to either stop the run. You're going to force Skolnick to throw, and hasn't been that great all season.
Right. I mean, she hasn't been terrible. Her completion percentage is 43%, and You know, she's got 9 touchdowns, so capable of, you know, throwing touchdown passes. But certainly the bread is with Tiffany Wright and Essence Bell running that football. You know, the two of them accounted for 12 touchdowns on the season. So I absolutely agree with you, Oscar, that, you know, the Outlaws are going to have to key in on those two very good running backs if they want to have a chance at this game.
If you're on the other side, Terry, if you're Austin, Kia Love has pretty decent passing this season. Plus, you got to contend. If you're Nebraska, you got to contend with Desiree Rodriguez and Ayanna Holmes, primarily in terms of the receiving core, and that's their bread and butter, the receiving core.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from my perspective, this game, I definitely would give Nebraska the nod in this one. What I look at personally is common opponents. So a common opponent for both these teams this year was the Oklahoma Rage. Austin beat Oklahoma 22-14. Nebraska beat Oklahoma 42-6. That's a pretty big discrepancy about how both those teams played Oklahoma Rage. And so unless, you know, Oklahoma imploded or they had half their team quit or something crazy like that, I think that should be noted. So that's why I would give Nebraska the edge.
And, Mark, if you're the Chaos at this point going up against Baltimore, you're going to rely on your run game because that's what's been working all season. And you had, what, a 3-set quarterback committee? I don't know if there was because of injuries or just the way the structure it is. But overall, between Talley and I think it's Whitlow Moore, that was literally your offense. And then pretty much Talley has been most of the offense.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big challenges for Columbus this season has been, you know, finding somebody can be effective under center. They didn't really, you know, it has been quarterback by committee there, but no one has really excelled any more than any of the other players. Kerry Lohr has 269 yards, which is kind of by far the most on that team. So, but, you know, the results haven't really been there. Everybody has more interceptions than touchdowns, and they don't have a lot of touchdowns. Rating, you know, QB ratings at 34, 35, and, you know, no higher than that. So, yeah, quarterback play has been a weakness for the Chaos this year. And it's Ovian Whitlam Moore who's been basically carrying the team by rushing the football. De'Asha Talley has 5 touchdowns, so she's, you know, carrying a big part of that load as well. So, you know, if I would be expecting Columbus to do a lot of running.
And then if you go Baltimore, Mark, the same thing happens. They're basically more of a run game. You got Vetok, Edelman, Stewart. So this matchup is basically on the ground because the quarterbacks are not stellar. So it's a ground game. So it's going to be defenses basically for both teams. To who wins it will be defense. Terry, let's go with the Atlanta Rage, New York Wolves, Daniela Ayala. This is her moment. Last year didn't work out because of all the infractions, so she's arrived here. You also have a comfort zone in terms of Karen Mulligan, okay? And then also Allison Ganlin. So if you're the Wolves, this is a must-win. You got to show up and take down Atlanta because this is where you wanted to be last year.
That's true. As we know, New York's season got cut short because of some calls on, rules that they broke last season. So obviously that's not a good way to end your season. Probably had a bad taste in the mouth. And so I'm really interested to see how this plays out. It's kind of hard to say how these teams actually match up together or against each other. But I've been very impressed with Atlanta Rage as a first-year team in WSA. And New York Wolves are 6-0 for a reason. So I think it's a really intriguing matchup, probably the most intriguing matchup of D2, in my opinion.
And, Mark, this matchup here, if you're Atlanta, you're trying to take down the Big Bad Wolves, right? Disappoint their season. So if you're Orianna Taylor, you have a good season. If you're basically Mendez, Mosley, and Harris, this is your moment. Five touchdowns. So they have no lack of scoring. So if you're the New York Wolves defense, that's your threats right there, the receiving core.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, and I mean, Atlanta does have a balanced offensive attack. You know, they got people who can rush, and they got people who can catch the ball, and they all score touchdowns. So I like what they've shown on offense in this game. I think it's very clear to me that they have the personnel to score points and therefore win with offense. So the question really turns to the defense and, you know, what they can do to stop New York, and I think particularly the passing game, since that's really what's been featured by the Wolves this year when they're on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, you got Capardi. Capardi's a main focus point for them, mixing in Parota, Gantlin, and Forgotta Yee. But, you know, Hall of Famer Mulligan right in the back pocket could switch it out, right? Ayala can run. So it's going to be a challenge for Atlanta, but I think it's an evenly matchup game here. Both good offensive powerhouses, good receivers. So it's going to be a great matchup. So, guys, that's it, the breakdown. We're looking forward to it. June 24th, that's what we're looking for here. June 24th, first round of the playoffs coming up here. We're looking forward to that in the WFA as the road to Canton arrives. And then we broke down the 9-cup preview, keys to the win for Mississippi and Texas Elite Spartans. And then, awesome. If you guys need to go back to the first hour, we did recap the European results in Germany and Finland and Sweden. So thanks to Chris Sacco for coming in, give us the lowdown on the Utah Girls Football League and being part of the Utah Conference now. So, Mark. And Terry, we're out of here. Looking forward to it. Got my Slurpee ready. This is it. 9-cup weekend. Looking forward to it. Plus the WFA playoffs.
Good luck, sir. Always the teams.
All right, guys. Catch you guys next week. Break it down and see what the outcomes are. Have a great night, everybody.